Good evening. Welcome to the Soleri Report. Today is Thursday, April 1st, 2010. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Tonight we have Money and Markets and Ask Catherine, and then the first quarter wrap-up, and then let's go to the movies. Our movie is One Man, One Cow, One Planet. It's up on the web. You can link to it from the blog post, and I hope you have a chance. You had a chance to watch it. If you didn't, I hope you get a chance to watch it after we talk about it, because it's very, very inspiring and very much worth understanding. So our theme today is from one of my favorite, as those of you who know me know, I'm a huge Sting fan, and one of my favorite Sting songs is called Brand New Day. And our theme today is Brand New Day because the change is accelerating and the world is going to be feeling more and more different. We all need a model to navigate this change. And one of the great lines from Sting's song, Brand New Day, is turn the clock to zero. So it's really a time to turn the clock to zero. The way I always think about approaching this kind of environment is I think, okay, well, you know, sort of things are what they are. How can I go about it in a way that makes me younger? And for me, that's always a finding the place where I can come at things from a state of amusement. So it's a brand new day, and if ever there's a year to turn the clock to zero, this is it. Okay, money and markets. You know, we've all in the United States and North America been sitting and digesting the facts that once again Congress has passed a major piece of legislation against the will of the majority of the people. If you look at the polls, there really wasn't anywhere near a clear majority in support of the health care bill. Clearly, various, you know, each of us had provisions in the bill that we would have supported and others that we wouldn't. But in sum total, again, this is not as severe as the bailouts. But again, we're seeing major changes made without the real support of people in what's supposed to be a democracy. So on top of the bailouts and now numerous things, but with health care reform, we're really beyond democracy and beyond the rule of law as we thought we knew it. And so the question is, where are we and where is this all going? Unemployment figures, the ADP employment figures, which are a little bit more reliable than those of the U.S. government, indicate 23,000 job loss in March. That's a significant easing of losses. What they also note is a significant decline in small businesses and small business employment. Now, that doesn't count the census workers, which is going to bump up the government statistics a fair amount. Over a million part-time workers hired for a short, usually six-week period, to implement the census. The G20 June agenda, interestingly enough, has as its primary, its number one focus for its economic agenda, rebalancing the global economy to work without the U.S. consumer. The translation means expect U.S. per capita income will continue to hold off and follow. Although there is good news, it's the first concrete piece of evidence I've had other than sort of walking around and watching the retail behavior. But the first concrete evidence of good news in the economy, recent California and New York sales tax and other state sales tax receipts are up, and that is a good sign. It does show a little bit of strength. There was a profound graph issued by Morgan Stanley in one of their analysis of economies. It shows U.S. households are now receiving more money in government payments than they are paying in taxes. So that means welfare, food stamps, unemployment compensation, various forms of subsidies and Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, on and on and on. We are literally now receiving from the government more money than we're spending in taxes. And that signals a very significant political dependency of the citizenry on government, and it's an extremely unhealthy sign. But it is a new way to manage the economy in a way that they're going. The administration projects an $18 trillion deficit by, and that's an annual deficit by 2020. The commentator the King Report, who sent that, said this is not sustainable. I disagree. In theory, it is sustainable. You know, in essence, what we're looking at is a model that says it's cheaper to pay people government checks in a model where they will do what you say, be dependent with very little modest incomes. It's cheaper to do that than provide jobs, and it works economically if we can move their jobs abroad and basically control their capital and their retirement capital. But it necessitates amortizing the cost over the dominance of the entire planet. So what you're saying is we'll pay you a small stipend if you leave us alone and let us implement the global war economy. You know, it's a model that has a large U.S. subsidy-dependent state. And, you know, so it's a model that I personally am not very comfortable with. But that's the model, and that's where this is going. The shock this week was that the foreign financial institution provisions that we've been worried about in the reform bill, the financial reform bill, instead snuck through in the jobs bill without everybody so focused on health care. You know, it literally popped through. The pretext for increased controls on foreign financial institutions is tax collection, the theory being people who have their money with foreign financial institutions are all tax evaders, far from true. However, essentially what this is going to do, and the implementation is going to take a while and it's subject to all sorts of regulations in detail, however, but the impact is going to force capital out of foreign investment managers, out of foreign banks, and back into channeling through U.S. financial institutions. So instead of you know, instead of having your money in Switzerland now, you're going to have to put your money with the same old in the United States. You know, you can put your money in foreign stocks, but you have to go through Fidelity. Now, what's this all about? If the U.S. intends to lead a global empire and amortize the cost of all these government subsidies over a base of all the natural resources on the planet, they really need to make sure that U.S. capital can't leak out. It can only go where U.S. enforcement and tax collection has open access. And so literally you're watching a trade war for control of capital played out under the pretext of tax collection and stopping tax invasion. Given that the U.S. governmental infrastructure is manipulating markets with insiders who are engaging in practices that lose money for the average investor, and that this tends to force people's capital back into that infrastructure, this kind of control is another signal to savvy investors that the system is not trustworthy. Now, it's not to say that there weren't 50 other signs of that before. One of the byproducts of this is we may see a fairly significant repatriation of capital, including that which will result in a tax bite, because investments have to be liquidated to be sent back. Now, let's see what's in the regulation and the implementation, because the devil's going to be in the details, but essentially what we're watching is the door shut to a lot of great money managers and financial institutions forcing capital back into the people, you know, who we just saw lead the frauds that have got so many of us offended. Now, this week, you saw, because we sent the launch notice announcement to you, we launched a precious metals dealership this week at Solari Silver and Gold, in partnership with Franklin Sanders, the money changer, and that reflects a decision that we made 6 months and a year ago, and that decision was really brought about by really a concern that the growth of these kinds of backdoor capital controls is just another reason why people are increasingly safer owning more and more of their having more and more of their assets and tangibles as opposed to into the brokerage system or in financial assets. Now, another subject. If you know me, you know that one of my mantras is never, ever, ever break the law. And the exceptions to that are when you break the law, you know, openly and are prepared to incur the misdemeanors or civil disobedience when paying the appropriate fine is okay, and you're clear about the liability. But otherwise, I'm unbelievably careful and try to be impeccable about never, ever breaking the law. One of the reasons I have that as a mantra is that when the U.S. establishment wants to engineer change proactively, their best defense is always an offense. And so there's nothing better to launch your offense than an IRS audit investigation. And in fact, what we're seeing is just reports from our network is an increased number of IRS audits and investigations hitting middle and upper middle class people, particularly those whose incomes are not dependent on the government, who are more entrepreneurial, have their own professional practices. And it wouldn't surprise me if we see this kind of steady increase. So now is the time, absolutely, to have your paperwork impeccable. I notice in connection with the health care and jobs bill, the administration announced plans that they intend to hire 16,000 new IRS employees, and I assure you that those people will not be targeted at Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley and J.P. Morgan Chase. They're going to be targeted at all of us. So now's the time to have your paperwork impeccable. Okay, so that's it for money and markets. A lot going on this week. One of the things I wanted to mention, I'll bring it up in the wrap-up, is the Federal Reserve is now finishing their they've been, for the last year, buying essentially the equivalent of the entire mortgage market. And that buying program is coming to an end this week. And the Fed just announced, I think today, that they have a new meeting coming up. It will not be subject to closed doors, a new meeting to discuss interest rates. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens as they withdraw that support from the market. What's going to happen to interest rates just at a time when government federal financing in the treasury market is pounding the market for a ton of money. Okay, ask Catherine some great questions. One of the questions I keep asking, I keep getting, is on the census. So let me go through the census one more time. For those of you who haven't read it, we did a special report on the Solari report on the census. It's up on the blog. If you just go and do a search for a Solari report or the census, you should pick it up. But I had our team really go through the authorizing legislation and look through at the census in depth, and it's all there. So special report on the blog. If you look at the last census, it turns out that the compliance rate last time was 72%. So that's approximately 28% of Americans not complying with the census. I have a map up on the blog. You should, if you do a search for the census, you should pick it up. And you can look at what the compliance rate was in your state, if you're in a high compliance rate or not. I said before in my previous discussions of the census that I don't plan to fill out the short form. I got the short form and put it in the shredder. I'm not planning on reporting for my household. I've had a number of people say to me, well, you know, if you look at the short form, it only asks for a little bit of information about who's there and how many people and what their names are. And it's really not very much, and so why not just fill it out? Because you don't want to get a visit. And my feeling is, and I can only speak for myself, when you, and I say this as somebody who was responsible to work with an agency that managed giant databases about all the housing and real estate in America, and giant databases on people who got government money, whether it was government housing subsidies or insurance. You know, all of those databases are controlled and managed by private defense contractors and information technology contractors. And what I believe is that data is aggregated with significant amounts of data from private sources to create all sorts of pictures of individual people and households and communities and all sorts of different economic and other flows. And that data, combined with artificial intelligence, is unbelievably powerful in the hands of people who have government and political authority. And when you can combine that data with data that accurately pinpoints someone accurately as to where they are, you create something that's very, very powerful. So creating a very accurate picture of who's exactly where, it creates a very, very powerful tool. And as I've said before, I'm very suspicious of what the government does with all of the data that it manages and collects. And the fact that that data, you know, it's a one-way street. The data goes from us to them, and a lot of the data that's supposed to be coming back out hasn't. If you look at the enforcement issues, as we said in the report, our research shows that the fine, if you don't comply, is $100. Interestingly enough, Fox News had a presentation and said that the fine was $100 per question, not $100 for the entire census form. One of our team went back to check, could we possibly have made a mistake, came back and said, no, this is a second person double-checking. The fine is $100 for the whole thing. I just had a subscriber post a question. Apparently Yahoo is saying that the fine is $5,000, not $100. We're going to go back and check and see why this keeps popping up. But our clear review of the core document says the fine is $100. We can find no example of people not, of being fined or any record of anyone being enforced for not complying. Again, if you look at the number of people who didn't comply the last time, 28% is a, you know, that's an awful lot of people. So, but I appreciate that we all may get a knock on the door. I expect a knock on the door and expect to be as gracious as possible. If you think I'm being a little bit too cautious here, I would encourage you to take a look at what I put on the blog today. The health care bill had a provision on page 1001, which authorizes the creation of a national medical device registry. And a national medical device registry includes devices called implants, where you put a chip, you literally implant a chip inside a human being. And if you look, you know, not to be too draconian about this, but if you look at who are the contractors on this, on the census, it includes IBM, and I really encourage you to go back and read Edwin Black's book on IBM and their role building the databases for the German operation during World War II to manage control, including to manage the databases for the Holocaust. So a highly accurate, very powerful database funded by government that combines the census with all the other databases that the government has, plus, you know, the vision for a healthcare database, the combination is very, very one of concern. There's up on the blog post that I put up today, there's a little video of Aaron Russo's discussions of plans to use these kinds of chips, and I would really encourage every one of you who has not watched it. It's only about 10 minutes long. Aaron Russo there's no more credible source in the world, I think, than Aaron Russo. He's a wonderful man, a personal friend, and I encourage you to take a look at it. Another question about the CFTC, Commodity Futures Trade Commission, testimony, and GATA. Bill Murphy, chairman of GATA, testified. What came forward during the CFTC testimony last week was more allegations from London about the extraordinary gap between contracts being traded on the London Exchange, the paper contracts versus the real gold. And literally, again, we see, in this case, a commodities market, but a market where the collateral is really not there. And so more and more paper leveraged, without the real stuff behind it. And one of the questions I got was, now that it appears to be documented fact on the CFTC record that there are 100 paper gold contracts per 1 ounce of gold, should not a few of the ETFs be in question? What the person asking this question is referring to is that you have two of the most popular ways in the securities markets for retail investors to buy gold and silver is to buy two exchange-traded funds or ETFs, One, the ticker symbol is SLV, which is the silver one, and one is GLD, the gold one. And if you look at the trading performance of those two exchange traded funds versus funds where there is a very strong belief that the gold is fully collateralized, what you'll see is that the ETFs already traded a discount. And the market clearly is discounting the fact that they think the gold is not there. I should mention that the custodian firms in London for those ETFs, or the custodian ones in London, those firms are also some of the biggest traders in the short market and in the futures market regulated by the CFTC. And the potential conflicts of interest are quite extraordinary. I'm going to be publishing, I'm working on an article now that we'll be publishing on the blog by the end of the month on just this question. So stay tuned for a much longer and much more detailed question about what's come out in testimony means to the ETFs and sort of the legal and regulatory issues about why this isn't being disclosed. The other question about the CFTC testimony says, so what happens now that GATA has been vindicated? The idea being what came out really vindicates our position that the markets are rigged and being manipulated. And the writer says, does the LBMA Comex Carnival game just continue? So far it seems so. The metals market hasn't shown anything new this week. And the financial media continue to black out the revelations of the CFTC hearing. Here's what's happening, because I want to step back and look at the long view on this. The challenge that the Commodities Future Trade Commission has, and it's why I wanted to do the Solari report with Jim Norman called the oil card, is we're in a situation, and it's happening across the board in all markets, and the commodities market is a perfect example, where we're literally seeing the financial markets being used as a weapon of economic warfare. And so you have a group of, you have the central bank, the treasury, and a group of the large banks acting probably as an agent for the central bank and the treasury in the markets and rigging things, using futures to do it. Jim did a masterful job of describing the use of oil futures in the futures markets to rig the gold price. But they're acting in concert, engaged in economic warfare, the goal being national security agenda. At the same time, you have all sorts of different countries, institutions, companies, individuals, investors trying to use those same markets to allocate capital and to preserve their wealth. And the two goals and the two uses are incompatible, not alignment, and there's greater and greater tension. And the problem you have if you're the Commodities Future Trade Commission is how do you balance and implement these two agendas at the same time? And so that's sort of pickle number one. Pickle number two is there has been, there has been extraordinary leverage particularly in the commodities in the gold market for decades. It's been managed that way. It's almost like at the bottom of the, if you get into the inner vault, there's no there. And all the players have decided, as long as the player in charge has the power to keep control, it doesn't really matter. Now, this is at the heart of facing the fundamental problems with a central banking warfare model. How do you, after centuries, face the fact that there's no there? So this is a pretty big question, and it's a deep question. And then finally, there's another question, which is, how do you regulate derivatives and futures in this country if you don't make those changes in Europe and Asia and around the world? So how can you do national regulation without global regulation? Interestingly enough, the CFTC commissioner was over testifying in Europe about derivatives regulation before coming back and hearing the hearing. So you're talking about a fairly a complex situation. So it's going to be very interesting to see where it goes. But for now, despite what came out at the hearings and despite what GATA has brought out for 10 to 15 years, the market continues to follow the guys who've got the power as opposed to the guys who've got the truth. So let's see where it all goes, because in the long run, truth matters tremendously. Okay, a couple quick questions that various people have. One, corporations now have headquarters in India, hiring Indian nationals as full employees and bringing them to the U.S. A couple detailed questions about who's doing this and how much. The answer is I don't know. I haven't looked at that recently. Clearly, the outsourcing is tremendous. We'll talk about in the wrap-up part of what's projected to start to really happen this year and next. It's been happening ever since the WTO went into effect, and that is what's called the rationalization of U.S. labor versus global labor. Essentially, now that you can shift almost every job abroad, there's no reason why U.S. labor should be priced very much above the global labor price. And what you're watching globally, and if you haven't watched the Sir James Goldsmith video that's up on the blog that I keep trying to get everybody to watch, it's just a perfect overview of what's, you know, what was expected to go on in 1994 and what's been going on. But essentially what we're doing is we are deflating the value of labor. And that deflation is a very, very powerful impact on the whole economy. And so I can inflate the financial system and the monetary supply tremendously because I can offset that inflation with this very powerful deflation of labor. Second question, quantum biofeedback. If you look it up on the computer, they can only tell you it's a feel-good tool. You need a medical degree to mention its diagnostic ability. Some genius German physicist, I believe, figured this all out. Anyway, so somebody's recommending quantum biofeedback machines. I have both a nutritionist and a naturopath, both who use quantum biofeedback machines. And I've had a fair amount of, just as a customer, a fair amount of use of them. They're absolutely fascinating. If you haven't tried one, you might want to. But they are pretty complicated, and they're good navigation tools. They're not, you know, they tend to be sensitive, and they tend to, I wouldn't take it as the gospel, but I think they're amazing and very interesting navigation tools, and I found them to be very, very useful as long as I've got a really good professional explaining them to me. Another question, I would like to know more about chemtrails. Chemtrails is a very significant subject. I've spent a great deal of time researching it. I've wanted to do a Solaria report on chemtrails for a very long time. I finally decided I'm going to do several, but I'm going to start on this month, April 15th, so not next week, but 2 weeks from now, we're doing unanswered questions about chemtrails. And I'm going to give you, as I did for mind control, I'm going to try and give you a framework and an overview of chemtrails. And then I hope to get some other people on, including someone, to really say, okay, how do I protect myself? How do I protect my health, and how do I protect myself physically from the negative impact of chemtrails? Okay, another one. How much control does the pro-central team have? Is infighting real? How did China and India fit in? The pro-centralization team right now has unbelievable control. And, of course, if you what we're going to be talking about during the wrap-up is how much control, not just that they've gotten, but what they're driving to do. You know, when I talk about being worried about giving data to anybody, any large organization, what you're hearing in my voice is my concern that the more data they have on all of us, the more powerful they become. So they have great control, and they have literally just been refreshed with about $12 trillion of money coming from the bailouts. And so now, is the infighting real? Absolutely. When anything gets this centralized, and whenever the money gets this involved and the agenda this ambitious, you have extraordinary infighting. And in effect, for those who know me, the reason I believe that the New World Order ultimately will fail is I think the infighting will be too much to bear. I just if you go back through history and you look at those civilizations that were the most successful, they had what the Chinese called the mandate of heaven. And we're looking at a culture that is as far too perverted to maintain the mandate of heaven. So I think infighting's real. And it's one of the reasons that I think the way to deal effectively with the New World Order is to withdraw as much as possible instead of engaging them. The more you withdraw, the more they infight. Part of the question is, how does China and India fit in? How China and India fits in is several ways, but the pro-centralization team that needs to get control of China and India, which is extremely hard to do. If anything, the WTO and the effort to globalize agriculture into agribusiness is bogged down in India, and the Indian small farmer has paid mightily to be part of sort of sticking the WTO in the mud and slowing things down. But there's a real, there are real control issues as to how hard it's going to be for the pro-centralization team to get control of China and India. So they're a very important part of the puzzle. Okay, first quarter wrap-up. My theme tonight, as I said, was Brand New Day, and I want for the first quarter wrap-up to take the long view. And I want to get you to really, because to proceed with a Brand New Day, you need a whole new framework for how you look at what's going on. Now, the advantage of really looking at what the pro-centralization team is up to and integrating their different efforts into one vision of sort of what they're up to and where they're going, the advantage of doing that is the more you see it, the better you get about how you use your time and money, and the more radical you get about withdrawing. There's so many people in America who are literally sitting in the middle of the road, and that's the one place that if we can avoid it, you know, we don't want to be. So I want to sit back and take the long view and look at the period from 1995 up until to date, and then look forward as to where we're going. And I want to look at sort of the big, and I put the list up on the blog, some of the big things that have been going on, and then I want to integrate them into a picture. And the way I think about it is I always come back to the missing money, because we saw $4 trillion plus disappear from the federal government from 1998 to 2002. And then during the bailouts, we saw another $12 trillion. Now, I suspect that some of that $12 trillion was refinancing out the fraudulent securities that were issued to steal the first $4 trillion. So let's just pick a number and say, okay, maybe we've got $12 trillion missing. That money is much too much money to be explained away by corruption or incompetence. $12 trillion is more money than you need to solve all the, you know, to end all the poverty on the whole planet. And I would really encourage you to sit down and start to think about, well, how much money is $12 trillion? Because the question, you know, one way to understand what's going on is to ask the question, well, where's that money going? I mean, where is it? And that's a question I've tried to answer for many years, and starting with what I call the black budget. And the more I researched where the money was going, I came up with a couple of locations. But my one place I think it's going is I think a fantastic amount of that wealth is not just going global, but it's going into space. And it's going into extraordinary high technology, whether it's if you're going to move a tremendous amount of money globally and you need to build a global military and enforcement infrastructure to make sure that money stays your money and you get a return on that money, you know, then you need all sorts of satellites. But if you dig in and you look at all of the phenomena called UFOs, or as, you know, we in one of the Solari reports, we looked at the Phoenix Lights and the, you know, the huge UFO that flew down the side of Arizona during 1997, and we now have the former governor of Arizona, you know, in conferences and up on YouTube saying, yes, I saw it too. I mean, what we're talking about is fantastic investments in space and a culture that's dealing with technology power that's moving much faster than most of us are experiencing in our own lives, and it really doesn't want to be interrupted. And it also has a very dark vision. It really wants to have control. So if you sit down and you look just at the money and all the money that's being sucked out of the United States, all the money that's being sucked out around the planet, somebody's pulling out a fantastic amount of money and they're spending it in a way that is not just of this continent or of this planet. They're spending it in a way which is of this galaxy, and the question is why and how, and those are questions we'll go into on the Solari report. But it's very important to understand that the decisions that we're seeing made in Washington and Wall Street are not being driven by what's going on in this country. They're being driven by what's going on in this planet, and they're being driven by what's going on in this galaxy. And so we need a framework that can envision a whole planet and a whole galaxy to understand the political debates and the resource allocations that literally are impacting our lives. So let's go back and look at 1995, and I want to look at a series of the things that have come out that have been phased out together by the pro-centralization team and see them as part of this extraordinary movement of money that is the missing money and the money games that we've been looking at and talking about on the Solari report. The first and one of the most important was the creation of the WTO and the implementation of tremendous globalization, allowing markets to open each other in a way that, for example, deflate the value of labor in a way that is impacting the income of everybody listening to this call. And again, the best video I've ever found to describe that dynamic and what it's doing to our culture and what it's doing to our financial situation is the Goldsmith, Sir James Goldsmith video, which is up on the blog. So the WTO is happening. The second thing is happening is the money is going missing. And I've talked about, you know, all of the, you know, sort of what that might mean. But again, we're talking about incredible investment in very high technology, which is rarely discussed and really not, you know, I try on my blog to talk a lot about the weaponry and the military issues that I think are having a dramatic impact and are being financed by this, but it's really not in the popular media and the popular culture. So second thing, missing money. Third, economic warfare. Great interview with Jim Norman on the oil card. But again, talking about the control of resources and the politics between the United States and China and what that means to driving the sort of what's happening here. To give you an example, one of the reasons the United States has been such a powerful force globally is that for many, you know, for centuries, we were the largest unified market. But if you think about it, we're now going to be 310 million is what's expected to come out of the census, and we're competing against a country with a 1.2 billion unified market. So clearly tremendously outnumbered. And again, we have an aging population. They have a young population. So we're watching the United States literally say either we go to a global empire or ultimately we lose, and so we're going to a global empire. And those economics of economic warfare are driving so much of what's happening. If you go back and look at my financial coup d'etat article, if you go back and look at the myth of the rule of law, what you see is the Anglo-American alliance moving out from same time as the WTO got implemented and the missing money started to go missing. They start literally going around the world, imploding different societies, and harvesting more and more money. It's very much Naomi Klein's book, Shock Doctrine, is another great one. Okay, so this economic warfare is going on in privatization of tremendous assets into the hands of the pro-centralization team. another one, deflating labor, which is a part of that. If you notice up on the blog this week, there is a great chart that basically shows the U.S. plan on dealing with how to stay productive, and that is a tremendous amount of immigration, cheap labor, coming in from Mexico and Latin America mostly, but very cheap labor that's going to, you know, that's going to keep us young as the people who've been here age, and how that makes us compare back again with China. The Economist about a month ago or 6 weeks ago had a big piece on how America's future was immigration, and if you go back in the blog, you can find it there as well. But a real indication that the way we're going to stay competitive as a country or as a market is by continuing to deflate labor to match the planet. And it's funny, in the 90s, when I started to drive around the country, on the East Coast and West Coast, most of the people I knew were very disparaging of the series Left Behind. It was a fictional series written about the rapture, and it was very popular among Christians. And the sales did very well, but particularly in the middle of the country and particularly in the Bible Belt. So everybody I knew on the West Coast and the East Coast was very disparaging of it. And finally, I managed to get a hold of it on books on tape, and so I listened to it as I drove around because I was driving thousands of miles. And what I discovered was that, you know, it's always important when something really resonates with a group of people not to laugh at it, but listen. First of all, it was I enjoyed it tremendously. But what it did was it expressed the fact that there were many, many people, particularly in the rural areas, the areas that weren't getting big government money, you know, they really did understand that they were being left behind. In other words, you had an elite group pulling out all the money, pulling out all the resources, building a high technology culture, and literally leaving people behind. I said before, when the president of CalPERS said to me, they're pulling all the money out of the country, they've given up on the country. Well, that's exactly the dynamic. You know, they left a whole group of people behind, decided that they couldn't re-engineer and embrace the future, so they were just going to be left behind, and we've talked about that many times. But it was a very interesting cultural note that deep down inside, if you read through all of this, you know, that there were millions of people who'd figured out that indeed they had been left behind. Control of capital. Another one that happened throughout that period was increasing controls of capital, like the ones we just talked about that were in the job bill, but all sorts of different ways of channeling capital into Wall Street and not circulating locally or not going to foreign institutions, but always having to go back through Washington and Wall Street. It's interesting that so much historically has been focused on the control of capital and the control of energy, and yet that kind of control is not going to go the distance if you're going to build a global war economy. And that's why we get to what I think is one of the most important, one of the important trends from 1995 on, and that's the control of food. Last week I took a vacation, and one of the things I did, I've wanted for a long time to really research and dig into genetically modified food, and I got a whole series of documentaries, very good ones, on genetically modified food, and sort of immerse myself into watching them and reading and studying and thinking about genetically modified food. And it's amazing when you look at all these trends. You know, I drew a graph and I said, okay, 1995, they start with the missing money and the strong dollar policy and the World Trade Organization. You've got all these different kinds of sort of centralizing things coming out in the capital markets in the economy. But then if you look at what they're doing with WTO and the implementation of industrialized agriculture around the world, just in the way that Goldsmith describes they would, and you look at genetically modified food, you see a vision. It's the darkest part of the vision, which is allow corporations to claim intellectual and patent control literally of life. And then on top of it, something is happening in addition. there was a farmer in Canada, Percy Schmeiser, who litigated with Monsanto, and the issue is if the Monsanto seeds blow onto a farmer's property, even though he doesn't buy them, he doesn't use them, he has nothing to do, they just blow in from somebody else's field, is he liable? What are Monsanto's rights to his crop and his property? And it's a very shocking case. He lost, and sure enough, if Monsanto seeds blow onto his property, then Monsanto can claim rights to his crop. And literally, if you look at the tactics that have been reported, wonderful piece in Vanity Fair by Bartlett Steele several years ago, if you look at the tactics being attributed to Monsanto, another great documentary, The World According to Monsanto, you can watch it up on the Internet. It's free. But if you look at the tactics that are being used, they're extraordinary in terms of trying to spread genetically modified seed, both through regulators in other countries or get farmers to use them. And I'd never sat down and looked at all of this and sort of tracked it in my mind with these other centralizing efforts. And it's quite extraordinary. There was a survey done in Mexico that was described in one of them where a group literally sat down and studied and surveyed all of the seed supplies of Mexico, including indigenous groups in very remote areas, and discovered that the infection rate by genetically modified seeds was already very, very high. And it was so amazing and shocking given, given where these people were, that it almost made you ask the question, you know, is the spraying for the war on drugs and chemtrails is one of the things they're doing, literally spraying genetically modified seed in these areas? I think it's a question that needs to be asked. But I bring it up because what you see when you look at what's going on with genetically modified seed and food, as well as the recent indications and efforts to control vitamins or make vitamins not available without prescription, if you look at the pending food safety reform bill, what it all adds up to is that the ultimate control will not be capital or energy. It's going to be food and control of seed. I note, reports in the first quarter that the seed bank that's being financed by the Rockefeller Foundation and the Gates Foundation up in Norway is, I think, halfway to being filled, or one-third of the way to being filled. So it's, when you look at it in combination with what they're intentionally doing, the seed supply, it's an ominous development. And it makes me want to get very, very radical about building a food supply that I can trust. So control of food, finally, control of mind and body. We talked in the Soleri report I did on mind control. On the mind control issues, I mentioned earlier under market report the national device registry, medical device registry that's in the health bill. Very, very chilling. I just finished reading Catherine Albrecht's book, Spy Chips, which is on the RFID technology. She's interviewed by Aaron Russo in his wonderful documentary From Freedom to Fascism. And she's agreed to be on the Soleri report, and I'm hoping to schedule her this spring. So looking forward to having her. The extent of the invasiveness of whether it's controlling your doctor, having access to your healthcare data, having it available on digital record, and then now with the latest developments in the healthcare bill, again, very, very chilling. Chemtrails and HARP come into that, and we'll talk about that more on April 15th when we talk about the unanswered questions. Needless to say, the current administration has done more to sort of deliver control and power into the pro-centralization team than any leader in the history of the Western world. It's quite astonishing, and as a political feat, it's Obama and his team have literally achieved as a political matter something that certainly the Bushes would never have dared to do it. Now, they've gotten, essentially their agenda accomplished on both the bailouts, on the TARP. They've gotten it on health care. It's hard to imagine that they could continue to get this year the energy bill. I don't know about the food safety bill. 50% chance or better that they get a financial reform. A lot of the most sensitive provisions they've now rushed through in the job bill, which makes financial reform a lot less, I think, controversial politically. So let's see what happens in financial services. It's certainly a way that the Democrats can redeem themselves by beating up on the banks before the 2010 election. So we have financial services reform bill, energy bill, food safety bill, more centralized control spots. I don't want to say that where we are is terrible, because you always want to give thanks that those three things haven't passed yet, but we could get financial services, and I hope we avoid energy bill and food safety bill. Anyway, if you step back and you look at all of these things together, if you say, okay, in 1995 we had the World Trade Organization roll out, we had the money start to go missing, we had economic warfare and sort of the economic hitmen around the world, we have deflating labor, we have, you know, constantly increasing control on food, on energy, on capital. We have all of these mind control efforts, this crazy spraying of chemtrails overhead. If you step back and you look at it all together, what you see is a very powerful and very wealthy and very centralized top-down effort to use very invasive technology to basically build a global war economy and really total control of people and resources. And it's a totalitarian vision. It's a vision that desires complete control. It's a vision, if you've read my swine flu article, you know, I think it's a vision that anticipates significant depopulation. And while it's very unpleasant to look at, I think the more people who look at it, the more power it's going to lose, because it literally, you stand back and you look at the whole thing together and you say, you know, this thing is really nuts. And I think, as I described in the Mind Control Solari report, I think the universe is really intelligent. And there's a natural health to, both the planet and the people on it. And it's a big planet. It's hard to control. And I think that the more this thing, or sort of what's called the New World Order, the more we can see it, the more we withdraw from it, the healthier we are. 2010 elections are a great time to have discussions with your neighborhood. I never realized the extent to which people do reserve time during the elections to have conversations. And I just want to encourage you. I used to always get frustrated because every 2 years, everybody would get interested in the presidential and congressional elections and ignore the local elections, and the New World Order was locking down 3,100 counties. I can't tell you how important local elections are and the importance of having really high-quality people in those positions, especially as we grapple with state and local cutbacks, which give us the opportunity to start to think about really creative reengineerings that were just not politically possible. So when times get radical, you know, it's possible to do things that it wasn't possible to do before. So 2010 elections is a great time to get involved. Who is your sheriff? If you haven't listened to that Solari report, I really encourage you to do it. David Lichty, leading the Solari Silver and Gold effort, and I went to a wonderful dinner for the candidate we're supporting for sheriff here in Hardeman County. It was very interesting. One of the things that came out is the reason we don't have more deputies patrolling a very large county is they're too busy, you ready for this, serving papers. What that means is they're too busy processing foreclosures for the banks, and we're funding it, we're paying for it. Imagine if the budget cut could be, okay, we're going to stop all enforcement services for big banks. Now, there is an idea. So I encourage you to get involved because, the devil's in the details, and there's tremendous amounts of money that can get reengineered in ways that are pretty wonderful. We'll do this sometime over the next 3 to 6 months in the Solari Report, but one of the best genetically modified food DVDs I watched was the story of what happened in Appleton, Wisconsin, when they started to serve organic fresh food. It was amazing. They ended up saving millions of dollars in the school budget because the vandalism and the absenteeism and all the problems dropped so much. It was amazing. Anyway, so there are great opportunities in reengineering like that. Okay, so let's turn to the money markets and see what all this centralization means to money and financial assets. Housing and real estate markets, the Fed buying program ends this week. It's been absolutely amazing. You see the Fed in there literally buying the equivalent of the entire mortgage market. So what happens to interest rates when they stop is going to be very interesting. We saw debates earlier this month going on in Washington. Geithner and the administration are not that aggressive about reprivatizing Fannie and Freddie. Given what is really in their collateral and books, I can certainly understand their position there. You have some of Congress saying, let's get them off the federal balance sheet. So that debate is going on. The softness continues. You have commercial real estate that has to really take a hit. You have growing foreclosures in the prime markets and the upscale markets, and the state and local adjustments are going to hit this market hard. So expect more softness in the real estate markets. Municipal markets, the state and local government adjustments, we're just beginning to see the tip of the iceberg, and next year will probably be worse than this year. Sarah McLachlan has a great song, and every time I start to look at state and local governments or what could happen in the muni markets, I just hear her singing, hold on to yourself, this is going to hurt like hell. And this is just something we're going to have to get through. There's a wonderful thing that happened in Latin America called participatory budgeting. When things got really bad and governments had to cut back and it got radical, the citizens got involved in the budget process and said, you know, we're going to get involved and we're going to be part of reinventing these budgets because we want to be part of making these decisions. And again, there are a lot of opportunities. Equity markets were up, did well this quarter. If you look at where they are from a percentage basis, it's not very good. And if you look at stock market performance for the last decade or two, it's flat or down. So you're reading a lot of things about the stock. We really haven't made any money in the stock market. I would disagree. If you step back and instead rerun your numbers and say, okay, how did the stock markets in the places with the aging populations do versus the stock markets in the places with the young people that are growing? What you'll find is, in fact, equity markets did fine as long as you were shifting your money to the places where the GNP was growing. And, in fact, what we're seeing in the equity markets is more and more money managers shifting to a way of diversifying portfolios by literally saying, I'm going to allocate my equity investment and my bond investments based on place-based diversification. So we're going to allocate this money according to where the percent of GNP is. And, of course, what that's going to do is that's going to steadily shift more money into the emerging markets. Now, big question mark is what is the sovereign bond problems going to do in the bond markets this year, particularly with the end of the Fed buying program? It's everybody's question. As I said before, the Fed is scheduled a meeting for April 5th. Here's exactly what it says. Advance notice of a meeting under expedited procedures. It is anticipated that a closed meeting of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve on Monday, April 5th, will be held under expedited procedures. Matters to be considered, review and determination by the Board of Governors of the advance and discount rates to be charged by Federal Reserve banks. Anyway, so we've got a game of hot potato in the bond markets, and we've watched a lot of bad press about Greece and different countries, that trashes the euro, and you almost wonder if it isn't a way of defending the dollar, because if you look at both our deficits and what's going to happen to state and local sovereign government, over the next 3 to 6 months, Europe is far from the only place with sovereign debt problems. So this is far from over, and this is going to be a process of muddling through. In the currency markets, the dollar has shined, and interestingly enough, precious metals looks good too. We've seen a breaking of the sort of perfect inverse correlation between the dollar and precious metals. But the dollar has been up almost for lack of any place else to go. But dollar performance is going to be very tied up with the bond market. If interest rates rise and the central banks and treasuries have to protect the bond market, it could be very bad news for equity markets. And so we see a lot of analysts and investors standing by and saying, you know, the stock market's up, but can it hold it? So there's a lot of insecurity and a lot of volatility as the hot potato kind of jumps from here to here to here to here. A couple of heroes I mentioned last year, and I'm going to mention them again. Mark Pittman of Bloomberg had a heart attack and died last year after having FOIA'd the Federal Reserve for more details about the Lehman deal, including Geithner's role from the New York Fed. Bloomberg fought in the courts, and finally the Fed started to disgorge those documents as of yesterday. Stay tuned. I think we're going to see a lot more as people dig in and dig into the documents and see what happens. Matt Tabby had another great article on J.P. Morgan Chase and derivatives at state and local government. It's up on the blog. These guys are amazing. My favorite one, though, is Peter Proctor, the New Zealand biodynamic farmer in One Man, One Cow, One Planet, who literally has gone into India and taught biodynamic farming and is literally taking Monsanto and the whole agribusiness model on in the ground and really organizing small farmers, and it's really spreading. It's marvelous to watch, but it shows you how on the day-to-day economy of food, water, shelter, of what a winning trench warfare looks like and what a difference one person can make. It's really quite extraordinary, and quite extraordinary when you realize in an economy, literally an economy levers up from the value of the harvest. So if you can create a dollar of farm income in a place, you know, that's going to multiply into $7 of income as it circulates around. And so, you know, one biodynamic farming movement can have a dramatic impact on the income of the small farming community and the whole economy. Very bad for the pro-centralization team. Okay, a couple of opportunities I wanted to mention. Get really radical about supporting the right local leaders. Again, do it in a way that gives you energy, but particularly if you're in a place with people interested in 10th Amendment efforts, state and locally. Get radical about building a safe food supply. I mentioned I was on Coast to Coast on Monday talking about this. Edible Communities magazine, if you go to ediblecommunities.com or Acres USA, great places to find your local food supply. We did a great Solari report with someone from the Vermont Organic Association. Wonderful links on that blog post. Get radical about putting 2 degrees of separation between you and the pro-centralization team. I continue to find wonderful, intelligent, capable people who are very, very busy and really don't have the time to pull out of the big banks or avoid shopping at the big companies if they can. But anything you can do to put a couple of degrees of separation between you and people who have a very dark vision of your future, please do so. We did a great Solari report on finding local banks. There are links on that blog. You can find links on the site. Some of you have noted to me the economic warfare difficulties that the little banks are facing. You know, I still find, yes, it exists. I'm not worried about it, but I don't think we need to get the Patty Hearst syndrome yet. We need to find the really well-managed banks, and they have immense staying power. Also get radical about helping the children in your life. The way to build a great local economy is by helping the children learn how to be independent and have the skills and knowledge they need to stay out of the matrix. The biggest investment that you see made in any county in America, and in fact around the world, is our investment in raising our children. So if we raise our children and then ship them off to Wall Street, we shouldn't be surprised when our local area is not full of entrepreneurial talent. And again, the places that are going to be successful are the places with the great young people. So I just published a little mini book called Gifting to the Children We Love, and the reason is, I discovered it was very useful to people to have ideas about how to do that. great question that we've had at the card for a while. What are the actions for loners and those feeling antisocial? I just wanted to stress, and I'm going to address this in more Solari reports. I really understand and appreciate your frustration when you have the pro-centralization team, drowning us in propaganda and spending a lot of money to buy support. It can be very frustrating to try and get involved and do anything. It's very important for you to understand that you should only do what gives you energy, because the problem is you're being drained, and the way to defeat the tapeworm is to stop it from draining you. So that, if that means you stay home and pray and read, that's great. That's what you should do. Because the goal here is if we can just help you not be drained, that is part of helping and making more energizing the whole system. So one thing you can do is put as many degrees of separation between you and the bad guys. And just that kind of withdrawal is so very important. If you want to get involved in the election, great. If you don't. I talked a little bit about the field and morphogenic fields in the Solari report on mind control, but I'm a great believer that the prayer and meditation and sort of energetic work in the field can have a very dramatic impact. You don't have to go organize or get involved. I did want to note, interestingly enough, because I was thinking more about this question, and as I was watching one of the DVDs on genetically modified food, one of the things they pointed out was that in tests with research laboratories, animals fed GMO foods stopped socializing. So if you're feeling antisocial, promise me that you're eating fresh food. It's fine to be antisocial, but I would certainly hate to see that it was coming to you because of eating genetically modified food. So please stop. Okay. I wanted to just mention, I mentioned Peter Proctor and Let's Go to the Movies again, on One Man, One Cow, One Planet, which you're literally, and this is tying back to the Goldsmith video and the Doha round of the WTO, what you're literally seeing is one guy get into India and help India literally bog the WTO and the entire effort to control the seed supply down in the mud, and it's very inspiring and a perfect example of what one man can do. So one thing we can always do if you're feeling antisocial is just send Peter Proctor a check and a little note saying go, go, go. Anyway, so in summary, it's a brand new day. My prediction is the pro-centralization team fails. I want you to look at them, though, because the more we see them clearly and the more we withdraw from them, the faster they go. And it's important to do that because I do think we're coming into a period in 2010 and 2011 when they're going to come out of the closet. They clearly feel that they can move forward with major change and major reform without the normal kinds of citizen support that they've had in this country. And so we're going to see an acceleration of their efforts and their plans. I want you to be prepared. I want you to be ready. And I want you to be able to think through what you're going to do and how you're going to do it. So with that, we end the first quarter report. Coming up, we have the precious metals market report on April 8th. One of the things we'll be doing is introducing our new silver and gold payment calculator. If you go to silverandgoldormoney.com or you just link from the Solari homepage, you'll see we have a new calculator. It does not only the U.S. dollar, but it does about 20-plus global currencies, all your favorites, euro, Swiss francs, everything. And it also allows you to enter a premium. And if you click on the equivalence page, you can see the melt value for lots of common gold and silver coins. And so check it out. We'll be talking about how to use it a little bit more next week. And then on April 15th, unanswered questions about chemtrails. We'll be talking about what is the spraying programs that are going on, why are they doing it, and how do we protect ourselves. So until next week, when I join you with Franklin Sanders from Top of the World Farm, remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in one, then you need to start one. So good night and good luck.